ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Over the weekend, thousands of people gathered across the country to rally against gender-based violence. Tomorrow, federal, state and territory governments will meet virtually at a special national cabinet meeting to discuss further action on the issue. The Commonwealth says the meeting will focus on enhancing prevention measures. And some of the measures that could be on the agenda include a national register for offenders, electronic monitoring, and national coordination of intelligence on serial violent offenders. The deaths of 27 Australian women so far this year have been connected to alleged acts of gendered violence. That's 11 more than the same time last year. Anne Ali is a Labor frontbencher, the Minister for Youth, and is herself a survivor of family violence. Anne Ali, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Sally.
You have your role as a politician, but as you've spoken about publicly, you've also been a survivor of family violence. What is it about that experience that stays with you and informs you as this debate is unfolding, do you think?
Yeah, I often describe it as a tiny little crack in a bone somewhere in your body that, like, you know, you can move on from that situation as I have. You can go on to achieve a lot of things as I have been blessed and fortunate to be able to do. But there's always a piece of you that's broken that you carry with you through your life. And these past few months have been incredibly difficult. And I know that, you know, for anyone listening who themselves is a victim survivor, they'll recognise when I say every single death re-traumatises you. And it's just really gut-wrenching and heartbreaking.
It must be challenging to have that sense that you're describing so well to me, but also having your political role as well, trying to tap into that. But I wonder also, so trying to switch it off in some way and get on with your job as well, that must be challenging.
I consider it that I'm incredibly fortunate to have the platform that I have to be able to utilise my lived experience to make change. And as an example, as the Minister for Youth, with our steering committees and our youth advisory groups, I've always put lived experience as one of the priorities that I want to tap into with young people and recognise with young people. So we have a youth advisory group on the prevention of gender-based violence, and it is a group of young people who bring with them lived experience of gender-based violence to help the government ensure that the solutions that we're coming up with have a youth lens on them and are informed by young people who have lived experience. So I think, you know, channeling it into recognising that this is a unique opportunity to ensure that that my lived experience can make a difference to the kinds of programs and policies that we're developing at the government level. And not all women are able to do that. I recognise that. It took me 20 years to start talking about my experiences. That's how traumatising it is for a lot of women.
When we know that some of our women are being killed, these figures show us that. When we know that some are living in fear, walking on eggshells, fearing for their lives in their own homes, when some of our women are being tracked, surveilled, threatened, they have perpetrators turning up at their work, they have perpetrators in so many aspects, infiltrating so many aspects of their lives, literally terrorising them. We have heard this comparison to terrorism. What do you think of that comparison? Even though it's unfolding in a domestic situation, what sense do you have of that terror for some of those women?
I think that for the women who are in that situation, it is terrifying, and it is terror. I've heard stories of women who have had to move from place to place. There's a case where a woman was moving from place to place and couldn't understand why he kept finding her. They found out that he was following her and living in the roof space. camping out in the roof space above her. I mean, these are people who will go to some pretty extreme lengths to terrorise and continue to abuse and continue to inflict abuse and trauma on their victims. There is of course a difference between, I guess, the legal definition of dissident terrorism, to come at it from a kind of an academic perspective. But I think there are differences in kind of organisation, mobilisation, the motivations and the causes. But I think it's important to recognise that for the women who are being terrorised, it is very much violence, terrorism, control, and, you know, just thinking about the fact that you say some of our women, but if your listeners could just imagine for a moment, if you're going to the shops, out to the supermarket this afternoon, walk down the aisle of any supermarket, you might pass four women. Remember that one of them, one of those four women, is going home to a situation where she's absolutely terrified, where she does not feel safe. And it could be any one of those four women, because this is a kind of violence that does not discriminate.
Minister, you're also an expert in counter-terrorism and de-radicalisation. The case of the 16-year-old boy who was allegedly involved in the stabbing of a bishop at a church in southwest Sydney, there's been some concern from the community about the labelling of that as a terrorism event very quickly. Is there another way that authorities should have gone about that, or is the very nature of these cases and moving quickly that police need to do their job? It's not the time for community consultation at that stage.
I spoke to some of the community leaders yesterday to hear their concerns on this. And I think there's an issue here about, obviously, they have an issue with the labelling of it, but also the application of labelling, and that it's applied evenly when different mobilised or forms of terrorism occur. I do think it is important to call out terrorism for what it is, and to be able to address the mobilisers of terrorism. However, from another perspective, and I'll just give your listeners another perspective here, and that is that the trend in terrorism is that there isn't, or it's incredibly difficult and increasingly difficult to pinpoint a single motivator or a single cause or a single ideology. Terrorism today is such that people who are becoming radicalised are able to cherry pick and choose different parts of different ideologies, almost like a kind of a fruit salad of different ideologies. So it is increasingly difficult to kind of say, holus bolus, it is just this ideology, or it is just this part of it, it's religion. It is does tend to be much more complex than that. And I know that the law enforcement and authorities recognise that. So from a practical perspective, it may not necessarily reflect the true motivations of terrorism. And remember, in Australia, our definition of terrorism consists of both the motivation of it and the impact of it.
And Ali, time has run out for us, so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Sally. This is such an important topic, and if there are any people listening today who are experiencing family and domestic violence, please reach out to the services that are available and call 1-800-RESPECT. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the Minister for Youth there, Anne Ali. And that number, 1-800-RESPECT, that's 1-800-737-732. Or if it's an emergency, call 000.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.